Welcome back to the Mojo Podcast, a place for curious minds to fill up on leadership inspiration and hear wonderful stories of mojo, lost and found, high and low. I'm your host, Richard Stokes, and we meet here every fortnight to spend time with a diverse and brilliant group of guests who've been generous to spend time with me. This new series, The Sixth, is all about commitment, a concept we all understand that can prove elusive and even fearful for us. So in this series, I wanted to get under the skin of commitment, how we can commit to ourselves, to our values, our purpose, and the payoff that we see when we literally choose not to have any more choice. Commitment is one of life's beautiful paradoxes. This week, I'm back on location, recording face-to-face with someone I've known and admired for some time, and I've been keen to pin down to be a guest. Sam Dean is co-founder of The Hub Ibiza, a very special professional community space where I'm a long-standing member. Forget what you think you know about co-working spaces. What Sam and the team have created with The Hub is so much more, as he'll explain. This is a refreshingly candid conversation about founder energy, being an entrepreneur, and a leader of a fast-scaling business, which happens to be on one of the world's most well-known islands. Professional life in Ibiza, I hear you ask. Isn't that a contradiction in terms? Absolutely not. And it also adds a special flavour to Sam's approach to business, to how he personally gets inspiration and vision, and how he makes decisions.
A mixture between heart and head, but then there's this kind of vision thing, as I say, like especially with the plant medicine stuff. And when I'm on the back end of the experience, take the dogs and I'll just voice note like a whole blurb of the future. And now, obviously, with the wonders of AI, I'll then take that, what could be an incoherent stoned mumble, into ChatGPT and ask it to basically explain it to the team. But you'll be surprised how many of the initiatives have come to light from those insights.
We cover a lot of ground. Sam shares his wisdom and the benefit of experience, the highs and the lows. We talk about trust in yourself and team, how he moves from being an ideas guy to executing, creating, how he escapes from short-term thinking and gains his much wider perspective in life. And of course, how he's been able to commit to this project when there are so many new shiny things for him to potentially chase. It was an absolute pleasure to sit down in the Hub's courtyard garden and talk. You'll hear the birds singing in the trees, a few motorbikes, even a helicopter overhead, before we got interrupted by some excitable dogs, so we popped into one of the many meeting rooms at the Hub. I hope you get so much from this conversation. Please do rate and review the Mojo Podcast on Apple Podcasts, and please do share this episode with anyone you know looking for some leadership inspiration, and actually someone with a love of Ibiza, just like Sam. Let's go over to my Mojo conversation with Sam Dean. So welcome back to the Mojo Podcast, and as I said in the intro, as you can hear from that motorbike going past, we're on location in Ibiza. We're at The Hub, which is a co-working space, but so much more. It's a community, it's an amazing project, and I'm with the co-founder, Sam Dean. Sam, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks very much for having me on, Richard. Yeah, we're very lucky at the moment. The sun is a-shining and the sky is very blue.
Feels like it's been this way the whole, dare I say, winter hasn't really felt like a winter. We're straight into spring.
Yeah, it's been a British summer here, hasn't it? Yeah, which is, you know, great for the short term. Maybe we should be a little bit concerned about the medium to long term, but humans don't necessarily look at things that way, so we're enjoying the sunshine.
Indeed. But the sustainability is an issue. We might come on to that as a wider subject today. Sam, I always start here. Mojo today out of 10. How are you tracking?
Yeah, I reckon today about a 7, I reckon. I did not manage to get in the gym this morning, which is a bit of a break in my pattern of the moment. So that definitely leads out into a slight lack of energy in the afternoon. Although I'm certainly calm and taking the day in my stride. But I'm not bouncing around like I normally might be.
Well, I know you're of a man of lots of energy, of lots of things going on. And also, I know, you know, you say I haven't quite got to what I'd like to get to today, but it sounds like you're holding that with grace and not with tension, in terms of I didn't get there and beating yourself up a bit. You're being kind with yourself.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of work that I'm doing around that in particular. I'm very fortunate to have a coach at the moment. And yeah, like along with my sort of routine and fitness. I'm also do like a little bit of psychedelic therapy, and I've, you know, a few weeks ago that was my last session with that, and you know, I've been sort of integrating some of that with this coach that I've got, and that's really helping me to zoom out and take things in perspective, because you know, founder life can be stressful, and I've certainly learned how to approach the battlefield, if you like, because it is a marathon and it is not a sprint.
So that's great, and I really want to get into, you know, this is, I guess, why we're here. It's your founder story, your entrepreneur's story, that I really want to dig into, and obviously the commitment and the mojo in that. So you scored yourself 7. So when I say the word mojo, what comes up for you? What does it mean to you?
Yeah, I think fundamentally energy, vitality, you know, and I think outlook and perspective at that moment. You know, because if you're feeling, you know, juiced up and energized, then things look rosy and you approach things slightly differently. And I, you know, very grateful that I operate probably more like an 8 or a 9 in that, you know, most days of the week. You know, I was very fortunate with that chemistry, if you like. Most days I'm excited and looking forward to what's going on. I guess that, you know, the pillars of my routine help that, but you know, just generally my bearing is towards optimism, excitement, and look how wonderful everything is, which kind of then makes challenges not seem like challenges. But yeah, mojo for me, I think, is energy and perspective, and that's kind of what I was thinking about when you asked the question.
Beautiful. Often it is, it's this thing that comes to you first, is you know, first answer, right answer, kind of thing. That's what's really sitting with you. And tell me and tell the listeners, Sam, what would be useful for people to know about you? And obviously, I've said a little bit in the intro, but your words be useful for the listeners to know before we kind of get into this conversation about your founder journey, your entrepreneur's journey.
Yeah, sure. So been living in Ibiza for 13 years now, nearly 14 years. Moved here not really knowing what was going on in terms of what I wanted to do, just knowing that I wanted to be here. Had a passion always for bringing people together. Used to do parties, was a promoter, you know, had a lot of fun putting on some pretty big parties. And, you know, fast forward a few years into my journey, my girlfriend and I, Kelly, we were looking to put together a space. For me, it was about a space where we could bring people together to work on new ideas. And Kelly saw an opportunity to actually put together a space that could be professional and function on like London standards. And there just wasn't anything like that at the time on the island. And yeah, that's what led us to start the hub. For me, though, one of the things about coming here was, like, when I arrived, I was very fortunate to get connected pretty quickly to people that were already quite successful, because my uncle had had relationships within the music industry. So I got to know quite a lot of people that were either running clubs or big promoters or what have you. One of the things that stood out to me was that none of the English learned Spanish. And I just, like, made a very strong commitment from the beginning that I wasn't going to be one of those guys. So very proud to say that I'm fluent in the local language. Well, not in Ibicenco, but I speak Spanish.
Yeah.
And that's something that has one of the most difficult things I've ever done, but therefore I guess one of the things I'm most proud of, because it's learning a language is one of these things, it's extremely unrewarding for a very long time. And then one day it's very rewarding.
I can say then it just clicks in.
Yeah.
And you're in situations where, wow, I can understand, I can communicate, I can get my point across, and all those things that matter.
Yeah, I mean, just yesterday there were 3 guys that arrived near closing time, and Ariana did a very good job of gatekeeping. She's always trying to keep people out. And they were sent by Nuria, and she is the Director General of Innovation at the Balearic Government, and she told them to come and see me. And I only know her because I've been on calls and talking in Spanish and showing up, trying to always build bridges between the international and the local community, and, you know, showing up and not expecting them to speak English at all, like showing up, meeting them where they are, because it is a genuine interest in working out how to share value between the two communities. So yeah, for me, like, living here, it feels like home. I feel integrated because I've made a lot of effort to do so. And I think the project that we're doing has got a lot of goodwill around it because of those things, you know.
And let's just for people's benefit who aren't here or mm-hmm. aren't on the island, may or may not have come across that, just a little bit more detail about what you are doing here and the sort of the arc of development and change, because I've been, you know, very fortunate to be a member here for 5 years.
Yeah.
And I've seen, you know, it move and change and grow and people come and so much more that you're doing. But I'd just love to hear a bit of that potted history sure. from you.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, when we started, the idea was a small workspace for 20 people with a nice terrace and very low running costs, a very low revenue target, but a nice place for everyone to come and work. Yeah. And every 6 months we outgrew the space we were in, and then we're in this beautiful kind of complex of buildings, if you like, we've got about 2,000 square meters of gardens and terraces, and we're 1,500 square meters of building space now, up to 45 offices is what we currently have. Mm. And we have a waiting list on those. We now have a community of over 400 members, and that is, like, you know, when we started, it was like, all right, we need a, you know, we won't let too many web designers join or too many accountants. We want one of each, so that it has this really nice sort of ecosystem type environment. And now, you know, like, if you were to write a list of the people that you wanted to join, you wouldn't have been so audacious to have the people that are actually here on the list. You know, we've got world's biggest DJs. We've got agents of the world's biggest artists. We're the home of Pioneer DJ in our music studio. Open Lab Radio have recently moved in and are broadcasting live as of last Monday from their new office in the front garden. Super cool. Love those guys. There's going to be a lot more of that relationship to develop. And Ibiza has this wonderful way of attracting this beautiful, diverse set of geniuses, and whether that be creative genius or people that have excelled exponentially in whatever career or industry. And the hub has become a real home, a second home for this type of person. Mm. So, you know, whether it's, you know, someone that runs the cookies pretty much for the internet, or if it's the architect of the most expensive houses on the island, or the guys who designed the 3D mapping for the actual Burning Man, the creative director of Elro, you know, it really is a kind of who's who from all industries. And it's, like, super humbling that's the case. And I think, but the thing that's really been, that's really shone through for me is getting to know people at all these different levels and realizing, you know, because you always have, I've always been, like, aspirational, always wanted to kind of grow and excel in whatever it is I'm doing. And without getting to know people at different levels, you kind of put people on a pedestal and you think they're so different. And actually, I think the wonderful thing about this project is that when you get to know people, like, you know, we're all the same, and actually we all got the same kind of goals and aspirations. And there might be someone that's, you know, 1 minute talking about 10 million euro offer for one of their artists, and then the next minute they're having a coffee with someone that I've asked if they could take time out to meet this new up-and-coming kid who idolizes this person, and they take more pleasure out of doing that, you know, showing the way to the next generation. And I did it yesterday. There's the guy here, he was one of the co-founders of Tomorrowland and one of the biggest promoters in Holland, and some new guys, new Dutch guys, all, like, really, I look up to him. And I was like, you know, can you take some time out of your day to have a coffee? And he was like, yeah, of course, man, please connect me. So that happens all the time. Mm. And what we actually do here is build community. Yeah. We just happen to have a great place to work as well. So, like, we really see ourselves as community builders that have a workspace. So, like, the way we conduct ourselves and operate as a team, like, I could show you my WhatsApp history, and it's just hundreds of groups where I've said, oh, hey, Richard, you should meet so-and-so, as discussed, looking forward to hearing how you get on. And then I exit those groups. So I'm just like constantly making matchmaking. So we try to take responsibility for the first time you meet someone. So the icebreakers, we try to see them as our responsibility, and we're really evolving and systemizing and working out how we can make that happen to as many people as possible, and not just, you know, 20% of the people that get the kind of attention just because of how the relationships develop. But how is that just by signing up here? How do you get that?
Yeah. And I, and thanks for the, you know, the potted history of that. And I really do get that, the sense of the evolution. Not just from the physical space, which you talked about. I remember, you know, the one room, 20 people kind of days, but more so this very purposeful and intentful community building that's gone on. I think, certainly for me, I think from sort of COVID days on,
for sure.
that was the real kick on with that. And so I wanted to sort of touch on change and how you manage it and how you facilitate it, because obviously it sounds like it has evolved. The vision has probably shifted on quite a bit. What allows you as founder to do that rather than sticking with, this is the way I wanted it to be, this is my idea, and I want to make that work, rather than this very organic evolution that's happened?
Yeah, so I think learning to adapt and change, I think, you know, there's a... the key pillars here, for me, the team of people that we get to do this with every day, you know, a group of extremely dedicated individuals that are passionate about building this project, allows for that. You know, there is no rigidity. And I think, you know, one of the phrases that I've had to learn is forget everything you thought you knew. You know, the amount of times we've had to be like, we learned something new, or a new way of looking things, or a new perspective. And then it's like, okay, right, guys. The amount of times I've sat with Joe and Luca, my kind of top team, the amount of times we've sat in a room and been like, guys, we have to forget it all now. I know we've been working for months on this particular way of doing things, but look, we've just found this, or this person's just presented this perspective. And it's, I think, you know, you have to evolve. You have to leave your ego out of it, but lean into it. Like, if it's, you know, if you're getting these kind of, because I always get vision, and it's like always I can see everything that you can see at the hub. I've like thought about it, scribbled it down on a piece of paper, and I've collected them, you know, like, and it's gone from drawing the seating plan for hub one to, you know, working out how to fit the offices in, to now currently there's another little bit being sort of manifested, I guess is the word that gets batted around a lot. But for me, I really think and see it, and I kind of like, I visualize it, and then, you know, we try and aim towards that. And I'm, you know, the team sort of trust in my vision, I guess. And we always joke that I make a mess for us to clean up that's about 6 months in the future. That's generally my role, which I've got, you know, the privilege and the luxury of being able to do, because I just know that the team are so good at actually bringing it to life and operating, you know. But yeah, forget everything you know is one of the phrases that gets used quite a lot.
Yeah. I suppose in there, the word that came up for me as you were talking was trust, and you mentioned the team trust you, and I get the sense you have to trust yourself as well with you know, we've done all this work, but we're going to have to pivot because this is where we're going to go. Yeah. What supports you with that trust in self? Because a lot of the work I do, often with leaders, ideas are there, visions there, but sometimes the trust isn't quite, and that's what we do a lot of work on. So what supports you with that trust in yourself and your belief?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I've had to learn over time, you know, and always still working on. I think, you know, one of the big things for me this year was really dialing in discipline, and as an entrepreneur as well, and I guess, you know, as an individual, from like, you know, adhering to a regime, fitness regime and whatnot, but like, as an entrepreneur, like discipline, as in like learning to say no to things, because, well, you learn it at some level and then the things get shinier again, you know, and you're like, wow, okay, we're getting offered things that we can never even dreamed of before. And, you know, before I would get so easily distracted, And I've probably, things are probably taking a lot longer because of me taking too long to learn that lesson. But yeah, I think it's just a commitment to being a student, you know, always learning. I'm always trying to improve. I have a sense of responsibility to the members, you know, we serving that community. Like, so how do we make sure that we're always trying to do right by them and to the vision of the project? But, you know, like the people that have supported us, whether that be investors or the team, you know, who are dedicated to this project. So like that commitment to, you know, always learning, always trying to hold myself accountable to what I've said I was going to do. And, you know, I'm still learning that for sure. But that's definitely something where my energy has been drawn towards. Because before it would be like, you know, very much winging it and, you know, just getting excited and enthusiastic. And now my role is definitely a lot more about, like, being more calm and collected about thinking about what it actually takes to execute on things, and not just being the ideas man, you know. And that takes, I've had to learn to love that. You know, I've had to really learn to love that bit. And this year for us is doing the long list of boring things that we know we should do so that we're in a position to do more exciting things. Like, on the other side of that is freedom. And right now it's, I've managed to psychologically convince myself that the long list of boring things is the shiny thing. That took a lot of work, but that's where I'm at. So, like, getting excited about, you know, revisiting the systemization of everything so that we can do it at scale or do it more efficiently.
So it sounds like a real discipline in thought and action, and also this sort of reframing that I'm hearing as well in terms of what was, you may have said, well, that's boring, I'm not attracted to that, I don't want to do it. Now it's, these boring things are the important things. And what we, I guess what we might get into now is where you're going with the hub and the brand. That's going to let it fly in the future. So we've just got to dig in and get on with these things. And actually, not just get on with them, but learn to love them. Yeah. And sort of change your mind, reframe, as I said, to what it means.
Yeah, for sure. It's and finding that, you know, that sort of, that resilience, that sort of commitment to being passionate about solving the problem, is giving great results, you know. Like, and then it's kind of, you know, for us, we're young, we're ambitious. I think there's a massive opportunity, given the way the world is now, and obviously the brand of Ibiza and the foundations and the groundwork that we're putting in with an international and a globally operating community already. And being offered some other great multi-destination opportunities. But for us, it's like, what is it if we do it again? What is it we're actually doing? And that's why this kind of really dialing in on like a community building operating system. And that's really where the kind of focus is. Because if we get that right, and, you know, we might get it right, and then actually the business is really doing great and we don't want to do it again. It would be nice to have the choice. And right now we sort of, you know, pretend that we're not doing these other things, but like we couldn't actually do them if we wanted to, because we haven't built the systems to make it so that it would be, because what we want to get to is, if I remove myself from this business, how does it get better without me? Some people in the team might argue it could happen already, but that's probably for another podcast. And then how do we take, you know, leaders from each department out, and their department gets better without them? Because if we're going to do it again, we want this to be getting better by design, you know, when there's like feedback loops and, you know, ways to review and improve, which we've been doing constantly. So like, how does that continue to happen if we do get the opportunity or distraction of another version, you know? But then I think, you know, I met some really, really cool guys a few weekends ago. They work with an artist and they've got this really cool online brand. And I was talking to them, they do events all around the world. And I was like, you know, how do you do it? And they were like, to be honest, we just decide somewhere we really want to go. And then we do a party there. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I need to remember that mindset. Because when you are in the in trenches, convincing yourself that the boring thing is the shiny thing, like you kind of can sort of be a bit blinkered to like the foolish optimism of, yeah, why don't, well, actually, I'd like to spend 3 months of the year in that destination. Why don't we see if there's an opportunity to plug in over there, or, you know, that's so, yeah, watch this space. I mean, if you ask me this question every 6 months, I've probably got a different answer, hence me being a little bit considered about my response, I guess. I guess the main thing is getting ourselves to a position where we are genuinely ready to do and then deciding if we want to or not, you know, but actually being a decision and not fooling ourselves that we're saying no to things, because you know, that's the goal for sure. And we're well on the way. As I say, the team has grown substantially. We're 14 now, across different departments, and there's quite a bit of evolution happening in terms of the offering. We're just about to take over the deli inside the venue. And that has a real opportunity to become like the heart of the hospitality driven approach. You know, hey, Richard, welcome back. Oh, I've got your coffee ready. Did you know we got this specially? And I know you really like that. You know, it's just like that has been missing for a while now. We had a lot of other problems to solve, and we had a great operator in, but, you know, and, you know, super grateful for their service up until now. But again, what is the concept if you do it again? And how do you build community? By more touch points, you can exchange more information, therefore create more value in the data set from a systems point of view, and then create more valuable connections for the people that engage with it. So that's really where we're kind of leaning and focusing.
So, you know, we've got this sort of arc of talking around a lot around change, mm-hmm. in the conversation, and just, you know, I appreciate, you know, it's a detail point, but, you know, changing out who runs the sort of the food and beverage piece, that's a decision to make change. I wanted to just touch on when things, and you sort of alluded to it, you know, it hasn't gone in a direct line from A to Z. There's been a lot of pivots and swerves, right? But when things have really gone maybe well less than optimally, you know, what have the failures been? So yeah. Where have the big learnings been in that you've, and I really want to get in the learning of it and how you sort of work through that and move on.
Yeah, I mean, there's like, I think, again, you know, maturing a lot as a person to be able to have difficult conversations is, you know, is one of the most vital things. You know, I think with a business like this, you always underestimate how much it actually costs to operate it, you know, and, you know, fundraising when doing it. You know, if I did it again, we would definitely try and raise more. Hospitality driven infrastructure is an expensive hobby. Not one that I can afford, but somehow managed to, you know, get the support of people that are able to help us financially, which has got us this far. Yeah, I think as well, relationships, like communication, you know, you've got to be very clear with things. I've learned that, you know, sometimes there's been opportunity for misunderstanding, and then that's created, you know, negative relationships, and, you know, meant that things went, you know, we've had to, some relationships have not continued because of communication, which is a shame, but, you know, again, you have to learn, and being a leader, you have to make difficult decisions on behalf of, you know, the people in the project, and for them. And sometimes it involves doing things that, you know, are not comfortable at all, but you have to do it for the benefit of the greater good, if you like. And I guess that's, you know, part of being a leader, you know, having to, it's not all, you know, getting visionary and writing things down and, you know, getting people excited. Sometimes it's like, okay, yeah, we really need to solve this problem and you've got to do it, you know, and then just owning it, doing the difficult thing. But also, like, obviously that itself is, you know, you can't have one without the other. And I think for me, it's, it always seems to be, I think one of the lessons that I've learned a lot from this is, you know, great things, like, one of a kind exceptional stuff happening at the same time as like some really difficult generally cash flow juggling scenarios has been over the time. And what you do learn is that, you know, relationships, everything is about relationships and communication for me. you know, and certainly the work I've been doing a lot more of this year is, how do you run towards the difficult conversations and not hide from them, you know? It's like, because ultimately, you know, if anyone's ever supported you, you were having a great conversation with them and they decided to support you. And, you know, if things aren't going to plan, then you need to also be as enthusiastic about communicating that and not trying to avoid conversations because you haven't got anything good to say. You know, that's something that I've been like, you know, very like working a lot on, and it's you know, it's paying dividends in those relationships again, you know. And it's kind of, because it's easy to be like, when everything's going great and you're all excited and, you know, but then if things aren't going to plan, then, you know, you've got to man up and have those conversations. Yeah. But then realizing, okay, shit, well, I wish I'd just done that before, you know. Certainly it's a fast track to maturity, I think, this level of responsibility, you know, and especially when it's something that goes beyond you as well. Like, you know, it's a wonderfully rewarding thing because we have the opportunity to impact so many people, like the members that use it, you know, we provide like a real lifestyle for people. And so it's like, you know, a lot of people depending on us, you know, so it's not just like, you know, it's like it's the opposite of a selfish endeavor. It's very much a community on all ways of doing it, you know.
Well, I think that's a very particular point, isn't it, about what you're creating and have created here. It is a community endeavor. Obviously, it's a business. It's got to wash its face.
Sure.
You've got investors. They expect a return.
Yeah.
You need to pay staff. But there is something about, and I really feel this, you know, being as a member, there's this a care that we're not just going to take your money, then you turn up and it's up to you. As you said, I'm going to introduce you to people. We're going to put on things that we don't need to put on, like, you know, monthly members lunches and that kind of thing, and Christmas events and all this kind of stuff, which has a cost, but probably doesn't pay back in the immediate term, but certainly does, I guess, in the long term. But it's not always easy to think that way, I guess, when you're running a business. Everything becomes so short-term and quarter-by-quarter driven. How are you escaping that? Because that's the feeling I get. You've kind of escaped that short-termism that so many businesses, frankly, I think, suffer from.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just get resilient, thick skin. You know, repeated exposure to danger scenarios, you learn to realise that, you know, it's all just a game, really. I think doing the work with the, you know, the as I say, three times a year, I probably sit and do mushroom ceremonies. Mm. And that gives you a wonderful perspective on things. You know, I think as adults, it should just be mandatory. I honestly think so. You know, if you haven't got a big support structure around you, you know, you're seeing a therapist, a coach and everything else, I think it just really helps us have a wonderful perspective, you know, zoom out. And then, you know, some people have real problems. You know, some people have real fucking problems, excuse my French. And, you know, we have a minor inconvenience or a relationship, or it's like, you know, just see it for what it is, you know. But the back to the short term, there are so many times, I mean, the members lunch, for example, is something that we do as often as we can. It's monthly, pretty much. It's probably about 10 a year, actually. And I reckon up until now, I mean, obviously the last year or so has been a different story. We've started to be in a stable position for the monthly sort of costs, if you like. But before then, it was like, no idea how I was going to get paid for each month. But we knew we had to do it. Like, just because it was something we committed to doing, it was something that just added so much into what we were doing. Like, the energy, like, it really is like, you know, building a community is a... you just got to keep showing up and you've got to keep doing it for the right reasons. And then we're getting, but it's still an interesting one, you know, because even now, you know, we're, you know, a lot of sunken costs into this project. I mean, you know, six figures into the project. And now we're putting the prices to what they should be in the market. And that's a whole new process, like learning then how to sell at that price point, even though that's what it needs to be for it to be a sustainable business. And the value is there. You know, we have people joining that are paying, maybe they're paying 350 euros a month now for a workspace and all of these social elements. Bearing in mind, we include fitness classes as well. So it can replace a gym membership if you use it properly. And people are meeting their best friends. They're meeting their business partners. They're doing, I mean, we had one member join who's a great case study. They were trying to battle me on price. And this is when we just implemented the new pricing. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I mean, I don't know you. Like, and you sound great, but like, I do know that we're heavily, heavily invested in building this thing that you really want to be a part of. So the way you demonstrate your commitment is by paying what we believe is a fair price. And I'm extremely confident in the value you're going to get from it. And within 3 months, they did 16 grand in new business from other members, you know. So it was like, I was like, you know, it is that thing. You know, the right people forget how much they're paying to be here very quickly. And if it's not for you, then you have a, you know, you make an investment, you get some benefits out of it, but maybe there isn't an ROI and you can go somewhere else, you know, like that's, we actually recommend people that are trying to battle us on price, we're recommending other places now. Our operating costs, because of the community building, hospitality focused way we do things, you know, our costs are probably the same as all the other workspaces that we know have put together. You know, we run it like a hospitality business because it is like, you know, and that's a costly way to do things.
I think it's really refreshing actually to get into, you know, pricing and costs, but that word value is the crucial one, because that's what, you know, when you're providing any kind of service, it really is, don't look at the price, think about the value. Yeah. And I know that's not always easy.
Sure.
But there you go, you're building up the case studies of look what happens. And to your point, we're committed, the hub. If you commit as well, you're going to realise the value. And I think that lesson can be taken, anyone who runs any kind of, I think, service or hospitality business, that sense of really look and think about the value and commit to it, you're going to get more from it.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I think it's also like, you know, it's so important for us. We appreciate that it is a significant investment, but if you do make it, if you don't feel it, then you're not going to use it anyway. You know, like if it was something that, you know, you didn't really have to commit to, then are you going to turn up to all of the things? Are you going to get involved in it? Like if you're not looking to be part of a community, then you're not looking to be a member of the hub. So we're kind of not looking for you either. And there is a bit more of a process now around that. And it's like if you're just looking for a cheap solution to get you out of the house so you can sit on calls all day, then there are other places and we're recommending them and they're great for that. You know, and they're great in their own way. Like we're not saying we're kind of necessarily better. We're just different.
You know what this reminds me of? I saw Daniel Priestley recently on The Secret Diary of a CEO with Steve Bartlett. And he talked about this thing called with or without you energy. Mm-hmm. We're doing this. We're doing this event. We're running this service. We invite you, but we're doing it with or without you. And that's what I get from that. It's like we're here.
Yeah.
Whether you turn up or not.
Yeah, I mean, exactly that. And we are, you know, we're always like open for the right people because I think, you know, it's a wonderful thing. And the diversity of like, you know, new energy coming in the mix and but I think we also owe it to the people that have already committed to make sure that there is some kind of gatekeeping going on. Mm. Because it's like, we're not just looking for your membership fee. It's like, who are you and what do you bring to the table? You know, this is who we've got here. This is what we do here. And then it's like, you know, we have this sort of like bit of a qualification process and it's working. Like, you know, the right people are being attracted to that. On the same token, we're not just now hiking the prices up and, you know, if you can't afford to pay, you can't come in. We've got a lot of, I mean, we're like the main sponsor of TEDx. We give them probably 15,000 euros a year of memberships. We have been the official headquarters of IB for Preservation Fund for 5 years now, doing the same thing. So we're major partners of theirs, have been for 4 years. You know, it's about 75 seats, which we sponsor and donate, which again is paid for by the community. So it is, and you know, hope that everyone wears that badge as well. They facilitate our actions in that respect. So it's not, you know, it's not we're hiking the prices up and I'm going to Bali on holiday. It's, you know, to make it sustainable, the pricing needs to be what it is, but for the right people, it makes sense. And if you are on your way or you're aspiring to be there, and there's still some space for people that we don't want to let the payment terms of get in the way of the right people joining, you know? So, and we still very much have that conversation if it's required.
And that just, you know, for me, that's, you know, the ethos as a business. As I said earlier, you know, you need to pay investors, you need to pay the staff, you need to turn a profit. You are a business, but you get to choose how you want to run it. That's what I'm getting the sense of, how you want to lead it. You're still, your hand is firmly on the tiller of the boat in terms of, this is where I want to steer this to.
Yeah, for sure. And I think on that respect, though, I still have to, my team are a little bit more, they help pull me back. I mean, we probably would still not be charging the money we're now charging if it was up to me. There's a lot more, especially with, you know, my top team, there's a lot more negotiation, if you like, around the big decisions. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't try to, like, the opposite of saying I know what the right answer is. It's more like, okay, this is what I think. What do you think? You know, and respecting each other's opinion and input. And if I come with an idea, I'm also like, okay, but what do you actually think about it realistically? And what does the workload look like? Can we actually execute this? Or what do you need from me to be able to do that? That's kind of what I've been learning a lot more, you know, as part of the evolution and the lessons. You know, it's like listening a lot more. But I think at first you do have to be determined that your way of doing things is, or your, what you see is what needs to happen for some aspect. And then it's like, we've kind of evolved and gone on this journey together. And now it's very much like, okay, well, I think maybe it's this way. Like, does that work? And I've learnt and like know where to play that. Yeah. Around, you know, where we kind of pass the ball around, or other times when it's like, just recently actually, I've like pushed ahead with initiative and like been proven wrong, and I had to go humble pie, and I was like, guys, I'm sorry, I just thought this was the right thing to do. And of course they're like, look, you don't have to apologize, like, you know, we also agreed with you, but now we're sort of backtracking a little bit, going to reprogram some stuff. But yeah, the lessons never stop.
And in terms of, I just got that sense of your decision making as a leader as well. Where do you get it? You know, is it gut, heart, head combination?
Yeah, I mean, definitely a combo. I was given a wonderful brain by my mother, amongst most things. She's a member of Mensa, super good around maths and logical thinking and all of that stuff. I definitely lean on my thinking skills a lot. A mixture between heart and head. But then there's this kind of vision thing, as I say, like, especially with the plant medicine stuff. And, you know, and I'll do it with THC as well. You know, once every couple of months, I'll have a weed tea. And then I basically see the future for 6 hours. You know, it's like I'm pen and paper, and I'm just sort of writing this stuff down. Or what I've started to do now is go on a walk. When I'm on the back end of the experience, take the dogs, and I'll just voice note like a whole blurb of the future. And now, obviously, with the wonders of AI, I'll then take that, what could be an incoherent stoned mumble, into ChatGPT and ask it to basically explain it to the team. And then I'll share it with them. But you'll be surprised how many of the initiatives have come to light from those insights, if you like. A lot of the stuff that we experience now in the project, because I think those, you know, that change of state, it's like the opposite of alcohol. Alcohol doesn't really do that for me anyway, because it sort of numbs you or sort of dumbs you down a bit. Whereas, you know, THC or psilocybin, they really open you up. So you really get sort of, you remove yourself from the situation, therefore any sort of perceived restrictions on doing things, because you have this wonderful zoomed out, and then you're like, okay, well, if there were no breaks, what would it look like? And then all of a sudden you've got like, okay, well, that person would be here, and then they would be connecting with them, and then this brand would be here, and then, like, you know, then we'd probably do it again over there, and then that would be connected. Or, you know, this is how people would use it. If it was ideal, because you remove all of the, oh yeah, how are we going to pay for it? Or, you know, all of that stuff gets out of the way and you just allow the vision to come. And then you take that and then you try and work out how to. Like I was joking earlier, like we've got, yeah, this plan to do this great gym now. Because I really think it would just be amazing if we had a proper outdoor gym, like not just a little area, but an actual fully functioning space. And I'm like talking to someone at the minute and they were like, they're a member as well. And they were like, you know, it's probably this much. And I was like, okay, well, I don't have that much. I don't have anywhere near that much. Like if you could be creative on the payment terms and I'll work out how to pay for it basically. And then whether that be a community funded thing. And it's like, would you pay, you know, 30, 40 euros extra a month if we had a proper gym with classes? And, you know, then it's like, and then would you pay the year up front if you only pay 10 months? And then maybe we can get to a point where we, so yeah, creativity around problem solving. Yeah. But try and solve the problem after. Like, create the thing first and then work out how to do it. So it's very much like the logical bit comes after. Don't let that get in the way. And I find, as I say, the way I sort of, the habits or the practices that I'll do. I mean, I'm pretty much sober most of the time, by the way, at the minute. Yeah, my girlfriend Kelly, she's not drunk alcohol for nearly 3 years. And I just watched her growth. She's like, her career as a DJ has gone through the roof. And it's like, every time I had a hangover, she was in the studio. And it's not a coincidence, you know. So then I've just sort of, so last year, probably 7 months, no alcohol. And then between last August and now, I rolled the dice. It was my first sober Christmas. And then DC10 New Year's Day. let's just be honest, that was lots of Patron tequila and a few very nice ecstasy pills, and then I shared a bottle of wine with my mum on her birthday, and apart from that I've not had a drink. So where are we now? End of March. Yeah. Going to Miami next week. That might I might roll the dice there. But it's very much again back to my responsibilities and my learnings. Like, I don't need to drink to change my state or to remove stress. I'll go to the gym for that, or I'll go for a hike for that. Or, you know, like, I'm very much leaning into it and, like, not just sort of trying to run away from the signals. It's like, okay, cool. I need to sit with that, or I need to work through that. Not, oh, man, let's have a beer, you know? And then, but then working with, like, the kind of controlled explosions of a hero dose of mushrooms every 3 months, and that being a way to really process and deal through and move through, and then this perspective shift, and then bringing those, you know, insights back in your day to day. It's like a control delete. I mean, anyone listening that hasn't had the privilege of a like a mushroom ceremony or experience, I really can't recommend it enough. Although this is not medical advice. Definitely not medical advice.
Well, there is a previous series we spoke to a mutual friend, Danny Saggers, yeah, who obviously, you know, works a lot in these modalities. Yeah. So if you want to listen, if you're interested in that, listen to Danny's episode. But Sam, I'm like, you know, well, thank you for that candid exploration of your leadership, of your founder story, and everything you've been able to create. And I really get this sense, what was coming up for me is you've removing limiting beliefs, all these practices and ways of thinking you've got. It's like, I'm going to take that as much as I can away and just allow myself, as you said, that word, that perspective to look and see of what could be, and then we go and do it. And I think just really, really refreshing.
Thank you very much, man. Yeah, just on a final note on that, getting to meet so many people across so many different walks of life or experiences and seeing, wow, like it just changes your perspective of what is possible. You know, meeting some people who've had insane amount of luck, or some people that have just, you know, applied themselves to a very particular problem, solved it and been very well rewarded. You're like, okay, well, I was limiting myself before because I didn't even know that you could play the game that way. So that's really sort of helped with the shift in the mindset and the growth, for sure.
Amazing. Sam, thank you so much. Thanks for creating this community as well, which I'm a very proud and happy member of. And it's been fun bringing it from various points in the hub on this very sunny day.
Thank you very much for being a part of it, Richard. And yeah, man, it's a privilege to get to do this every day.
Oh, I just love this conversation. Sam is a super humble guy, really in service
of the community that he's helped build. And he has this infectious energy that really rubs off on you when you meet. So if you're in Ibiza, I do recommend stopping by the Hub to meet him. So how do I summarize that? Well, a few areas I was really fascinated by that I'm going to pick out. Getting into that position to forget what you thought you knew in order to go again and to grow. Perhaps that is the secret to pivoting. And his reframing of what he'd called kind of the boring stuff to become the vital stuff that he has to do to help him realize his vision for the Hub in the future. And this absolute cracker, learning to run towards the difficult conversations in life. Simple to say, not easy to do. And I bet you all have a few of these conversations that you know you need to have, but that something always seems to get in the way of, and that'll be the fear. And you know this for a fact. The fear isn't in the way, the fear is the way. If you're a business owner or a leader in business looking for some support in areas such as having difficult conversations, that's what I often help my coaching clients with, to have the mindset and the methodologies to go there. More information at mojo-leadership.com. Thanks again to Sam. Find his bio and links to the Hub in the show notes. As I mentioned, do please rate, review and share this podcast. And also do check out the nearly 80 conversations I've had with other amazing guests over the last 4 years. I'll be back next week with another inspiring guest and story of mojo and commitment to their passion and purpose. Until then, I hope your mojo continues to flow.